silent, hoping his desire didn't show on his face.
"Would you be willing to go back to Saturn, Mr. Tavallera?"
He nodded, not trusting himself to speak. Then Sister Angelique smiled at him.
"You want to go back to that habitat, don't you? You applied for a return flight almost the moment you touched down on Earth, didn't you?"
"Yeah," he admitted.
"So you've invented this idea of a hoax as a means of getting us to allow you to return there?"
"No, I honestly think it's a possibility. I really do." She watched him for several long moments, still smiling, until he began to feel uneasy under her gaze. "Look," he said, "I want to go back, sure. But I really think that some of those scientists could have rigged this thing, and..." Sister Angelique raised a long, slim finger to silence him.
"I'll make a deal with you, Mr. Tavallera. You can call Goddard and speak to the authorities there. Have them investigate the possibility."
His spirits sank. Then he brightened as he realized, "I'll get to talk to Holly. She's the chief administrator of the habitat. I'd have to talk to her about an investigation." But he heard himself say, "It'd be better for me to go there in person. I'd get better results, don't you think?" Her widening smile told him that she saw right through him.
"No, Mr. Tavallera, I don't agree. First, you are not a trained investigator. It would be better for you to ask Goddard's security people to conduct the investigation. Second, I prefer to have you here, working with me."
"Working with you?"
"Yes. While the idea of a cabal of Goddard's scientists perpetrating a hoax on us is a possible answer to our puzzle, it is only one possibility. I want you to assist me in tracking down some of the others."
"But you just said I'm not a trained investigator."
"That's all right. You'll work with me and do what I tell you."
"And my job back home?"
"That will all be taken care of. I am the personal assistant of Bishop Zebulon Craig. I can get you reassigned to my staff, no problem."
"I'll have to move here?"
"You'll move to wherever I am, Mr. Tavallera. Wherever this task takes us."
"But my home's in Little Rock. My mother's there, and she expects me..."
"You will go home when this task is successfully finished, Mr. Tavallera. Not before."
"But why me? Why can't you pick on somebody else?"
"You have been chosen. The Lord quite often works in mysterious ways."
"In other words, I don't have any choice, do I?"
"No, Mr. Tavallera. I'm afraid you don't. You will work with me until we solve this puzzle."
"Whether I like it or not," he groused to himself.
"Don't look so unhappy," she said with a little laugh. "Once we find the answers we're looking for, I can see to it that you are allowed to return to Goddard."
"You can?" he blurted.
"Once we find the answers, Mr. Tavallera, once we find the answers."
Chapter 10. His mother looked distressed.
"They told me you'd been arrested," she said, nearly in tears.
Tavallera sat in a cubicle in the New Morality's Rocky Mountain base and said to the image on the desktop screen, "No, Ma, I've been drafted, that's all, not arrested." There was a noticeable lag before her response reached him, longer than the normal delay in the relay of a message from a commsat in geosync orbit, Tavallera thought.
"Drafted? Into the army?"
"No, Ma, I'm on a special assignment for a branch of the New Morality."
"What do they want you for?"
"Good question," he thought. "Damned if I know." His mother blinked at him.
"What did you say? I saw your lips move, but the sound didn't come through."
"Christ," Tavallera said to himself. "They must have a censoring circuit blocking out words on their disapproved list. Or maybe a live sensor listening to every word we say. Probably block out anything I might say about this work I'm supposed to be doing, too."
"When will you come back home?" his mother asked.
"Tomorrow. I'm staying here overnight, and then they'll fly me home tomorrow."
"Oh, good."
He had to tell her. "It'll just be to pack some clothes and things, Ma. Then I go out on my new assignment."
"You'll be leaving again? For where?"
"Don't know yet."
"But they can't just pull you this way and that way. First New Orleans, and now you don't even know where."
"Yes, they can, Ma." Silently, he added, "They can do any goddamn thing they want to." The next day, a different pair of agents flew him back to Little Rock and caused the neighborhood sensation when they landed their rattling, roaring tilt rotor in the middle of the street right in front of Tavalera's house. Pedestrians walking their pets gaped. People came out of their houses and stood at their front doors, staring. He packed his travel bag as quickly as he could while his mother wept and bombarded him with 1,000 questions he couldn't answer. At last he kissed her goodbye, promised to call her every day, if he could, he told himself, and then sprinted gratefully back to the waiting tilt rotor, its big rotor arms whooshing as they swung lazily. Once he got aboard, the ship whisked him to Atlanta and the headquarters of the New Morality. The headquarters complex lay in the heart of the city, a sprawling congregation of buildings centered on the massive neo-Gothic cathedral that stood on the site of the modest white clapper church where the movement had begun nearly a century earlier. That old wood-frame church had been taken down board by board, and then lovingly restored inside the gleaming geodesic dome of a new museum that stood at the edge of the complex's soaring glass and steel skyscrapers. The towers held the offices, meeting rooms, hospital, hotels, and auditoriums of what had become a supremely powerful international organization. The tilt rotor had touched down on a spacious, grassy field off to one side of the complex of buildings. His escorts had given Tavalera a pocket phone programmed with the location of the office he was to report to, and warned him that the phone was programmed only for the GPS channel. They pointed him in the right direction, then left him alone. The tilt rotor zipped away, clattering noisily. Headed for their next victim, Tavalera said to himself. He was alone for the first time in days, he realized. Then he figured that the pocket phone they'd given him showed exactly where he was, and if he didn't follow its instructions to the office, a couple more escorts would show up and make certain he went where they told him to go. With a shrug of acquiescence, he started off. The headquarters complex was like a big university campus, Tavalera thought, as he followed the GPS directions on the tiny screen of the pocket phone. The walkways were thick with people. None of them were using pocket phones. They must be outlawed, Tavalera figured. Nearly silent electric autos glided along the gently winding streets. He hadn't seen Sister Angelique since leaving the Rockies. Now he walked through the bright morning sunshine to the office where he'd been told to report for work. It was hot, even this early in the February morning. Tavalera felt surprisingly good, though, despite the fact that he'd been picked up and hauled around the country like a sack of potatoes, moved this way and that without any recourse or say in the matter. That didn't bother him too much, because he was thinking about the possibility that he just might be able to get back to the massive habitat Goddard, back to the woman he loved, back to the life he had foolishly left behind. At last he found the building where his office was located, in the maze of glass and steel towers, and even found the office on the 14th floor that he was told to report to.
"We've been expecting you,"
said the young woman behind the reception desk. She wore her light brown hair in a stylish sweep down one side of her attractive face, even though her clothing looked more like a dark cleric's robe than the kind of fashionable dress that a good-looking young woman would wear. She spoke in a sibilant near whisper. Tavalera followed her softly voiced instructions down a long corridor, past three cross corridors, and finally a right turn at the fourth crossing. The corridors were thickly carpeted. The soft pastel walls seemed to absorb sound. Men and women walked past him, smiled and nodded. Some even said good morning. All in whispers. It began to make him feel nervous. At last he found the room he was looking for. Its door was open. Windowless, but all four walls glowed with smart screens showing the palm bough symbol of the New Morality. There was no desk, but a pair of comfortable-looking armchairs covered in butterscotch fabric sat in the middle of the room with a low table between them. Tavalera stepped in and looked around. Nothing else in sight. The door swung shut and clicked. One wall broke into a life-sized image of Sister Angelique, sitting at a desk in another office somewhere. She broke into her bright, pleased smile.
"Good morning, Mr. Tavalera. Are you ready to begin God's work?"
Chapter 11 Tavalera sank into one of the armchairs. "I guess so," he said.
"Good. I'm sorry I couldn't be with you in person this morning. This interaction